Ohio recorded 157 deaths related to domestic violence between July 2024 and June of 2025. That's a 37% increase from the previous year, and it includes the deaths of 11 children. Now, two Ohio lawmakers are proposing the creation of a registry for repeat domestic violence offenders. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss that proposal, how it would work, and any potential concerns are Ohio State Representative Cecil Thomas, a Cincinnati Democrat. Thanks so much for being here, Representative Thomas.
Thank you for the invitation. Thank you.
And Ohio Domestic Violence Network Senior Director for Policy and Prevention, Lisa DeGeeter. Welcome to the program, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Representative Thomas, tell us about this registry. What's the idea behind it?
Well, first of all, let me kind of lay the foundation. I grew up under an extremely domestic violence situation in my own home.
Oh, goodness.
My mother and father, it was just terrible. And I was very young and had to endure all of that. And then once I became a law enforcement officer, I had significant opportunities to deal with individuals who were subjected to domestic violence. And one common thread was that, similar to my mom, she wouldn't leave because of the insecurity that she felt that she would have in trying to take care of the children by herself. We was of five, six siblings. And so as a lawmaker, I'm the ranking member on the Public Safety Committee. And anywhere I can see where I can be of some, make a difference in an area, I will immediately try to take up that cause. And then as this situation evolved, I got a call from a news reporter for one of the news agencies. They called and asked if I would be interested in looking at Tennessee's domestic violence registry that they had just passed and would I consider it here in Cincinnati, I should say in Ohio. And sure enough, I said, well, yeah, at least I'll be open to try to do something of that nature, especially given the numbers that I think were reported to, they came to the committee in 2025, we were around October, mm-hmm. and testified, and the numbers were very concerning. Partner relationship deaths was very concerning. I think that's when you report 157.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. So I said, well, yeah, by all means, I'll get involved. So once I introduced the legislation, the idea behind the legislation was, for the most part, to try to do something else that may have some impact on this whole issue. And it starts the conversation. And that's kind of where we are now. I'm not headset on my way to get this done. No, I want to bring all of the interested parties to the table, allow us to put our heads together and see if there's anything, some merit to some of what we're trying to do. And so far, I've heard both sides, and there are legitimate concerns from both sides of the spectrum, the prosecutors as well as representatives such as Lisa and her organization and the things that they are concerned about.
Yeah. Well, let's make sure we define for our listeners what exactly this would do. This would be essentially an online, I guess, database of repeat offenders, domestic violence offenders. Is that the idea? So if you're convicted or plead guilty or whatever more than mm-hmm. once for domestic violence, you would be on this list.
Yeah, similar to the sexual registry.
Sex offenders.
Sex mm-hmm. offender registry. After your second conviction for domestic violence, you would go onto a registry. You would have to be required to register your conviction with the registry. And going forward, if you do not register, you could be brought back into the court for violation of a court order. Mm-hmm. Then the judge can take appropriate action at that point. But the idea was to create an atmosphere where another potential barrier for individuals who are thinking about doing harm to their partner to try to, you know, discourage that, as well as to opened the door for individuals to look at the registry in the event they're thinking about connecting up with someone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's both about deterrence and warning potential
Absolutely.
Victims. So Lisa, I mentioned Ohio recorded these 157 deaths related to domestic violence. Do you have any idea how many of those perpetrators had previous convictions? Is it pretty typical for a domestic violence offender to have a record of repeated offenses?
That actually is a really complicated question to unpack. There usually is a history, but oftentimes when domestic violence is what the initial charge is, they get pled down to disorderly conduct or other lower level things. By the time somebody's charged a third time with domestic violence, it should be a felony. But we see cases where people are being charged a sixth, seventh, eighth time. And because they've all pled down, they never get to the felony court where it can be dealt with appropriately. So we do know, and I should say when we compile the report that we compile every year, we run media aggregators. And so we always preface all of our numbers with at least, because we're trying to find everything we can find and we're certain that we're not getting all of it. But we know that 16% of the perpetrators in last year's report had a history of stalking. At least 12% had a history of committing acts of strangulation, which is a felony. 55% of the perpetrators total had a criminal history, and 37% of those were felonies. 36% had a current or a previous protection order, and 38% of the cases where there were children, there were custody disputes going on. So we know law enforcement is involved with these families, prosecutor's office, and multiple types of court systems are seeing these cases.
Yeah. We're talking about a proposed registry for repeat domestic violence offenders. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So Lisa, is it typical to see a pattern of escalating behavior with domestic violence cases? They start maybe at a lower level form of abuse and go up from there.
That is absolutely right. We see not only do incidents become more violent, we see them tend to compress over time. The cycle becomes faster and faster as more things occur. And domestic violence is really a different kind of crime than pretty much anything else. People don't want to send their loved ones to jail. They're looking for abuse to stop, but they're not necessarily looking to end their families. And so we see survivors often try and minimize what's going on in the home. And when particularly given that we're referencing the fatality report, one of the things we always like to tell people is if somebody is saying they're finally at a point where they think their life is in jeopardy, that is where we see survivors really being forthright about what's going on. They're usually very, very good at identifying and articulating that risk.
Yeah. Representative Thomas, you shared your own personal story with us, and I really appreciate your willingness to share what you grew up with. Mm-hmm. Also, as a former Cincinnati police officer, these domestic violence cases that you encountered in that part of your life, can you talk us through how you saw that play out? Did you see that escalation of violence? And it sounds like that's something that's really stuck with you through these different phases of your career, wanting to try to help.
Well, when I think back, I remember as a law enforcement officer, there was a time when I would respond to a call for domestic violence, and I would have the option of telling the aggressor to maybe leave the home for a little while, everybody let the tempers calm down. And that was an option that I had at my disposal. And eventually it changed. I remember the law changed to say that if there are signs of domestic violence, physical violence, or something of that nature, I had no choice. You had to remove that individual from the home, the actual aggressor. And that was another effort at trying to fix the problem. And this going back to the late 70s, early 80s, and in those areas. When I would see how an individual, usually the woman, was very fearful of, number one, breaking up the home. They did not want us. They just wanted him to stop.
Right.
And it was just a vicious cycle. And I found myself oftentimes referring a lot of the young ladies to the Women's Helping Women organization so that they could have somebody that they could talk to.
Yeah. Well, I imagine for a lot of the women you encountered, they didn't want to break up the home for a lot of reasons, but part of it probably was financial.
Absolutely.
I mean, you might be talking about the breadwinner there, somebody they're counting on.
And they were thinking about the kids.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other whole aspect of this. So it's a very a difficult balancing process to try to fix this problem or work at it. And this is why I have folks like Lisa and their organization, which is when we get our heads together, maybe we can find a little bit more balance. I even got the prosecutors. They are more on, they want mandatory sentencing. But then you got to understand that now, will that defer someone from reporting? Would it discourage him? You know, because now my husband's going to have to get locked up. So all of these things.
So Representative Thomas, what information would this registry include and who would be responsible for maintaining it?
Well, the way the bill reads now, it will include the name of the individual and his, I believe his date of birth. And I don't think it would get into his real personal information. No, not social security numbers, things like that.
Maybe like what he was convicted of.
Yeah,
or
and
he
the
or
conviction.
She,
That would be the scope of it. We're not going to get into the more personal data regarding the individual. And as it reads now, we're looking at the Bureau of, at the state level.
BCI.
That's we're looking at that as a reporting agency. However, the prosecutor's office said that maybe we should consider the sheriff at the local level, similar to
the sex offender database works. Okay. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. We will continue our conversation after a short break. And later in our program, the impact of an Ohio Supreme Court ruling on domestic violence survivors. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about a proposed registry for repeat domestic violence offenders in Ohio. My guests are Ohio State Representative Cecil Thomas, a Cincinnati Democrat, and Ohio Domestic Violence Network Senior Director for Policy and Prevention, Lisa DeGeeter. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Representative Thomas, before the break, we were talking about sort of the mechanics of how this registry would work as your proposal stands now. I know it's a bit of a work in progress, but could people ever be removed from the registry under the proposal as you have it envisioned?
Yeah, I'm checking now. I do believe if you don't have a third conviction within a 5-year period, you would drop off the registry. I think it's 10 years. I think it goes up after if it's in the 10-year range.
The more convictions you have, and the more serious those convictions and that sort of thing.
So it's not a permanent attachment to an individual. It just, in other words, it gives it's an incentive for the perpetrator to not reoffend in order to, and we're just trying to think this through and try to do some balancing.
Yeah. Lisa, is there any concern that having identifying information about the perpetrators and information about convictions for perpetrators, that might expose the identities of their victims?
Yes, that's actually one of our primary concerns about the bill. We are always appreciative when people take the issue seriously and are looking to find ways to hold offenders accountable. But because this deals very specifically with a section of code where the crime can only be committed against family or household members, we understand that somebody's name as a victim is not going to be there publicly available in a database for anyone to look at. but it's not going to take too much work to figure out the very limited possibility of people who could have been the victim in that offense.
Yeah. Representative Thomas, is that something you and your co-sponsor are thinking about with this bill as you talk to people like, you know, Lisa's organization and the prosecutors and that sort of thing?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're open to try and figure out, well, what is the most feasible way to do this and not have unintended consequences? And this is why we want to have these interested parties meetings to talk through a lot of these areas. Right now, I could probably go on the sheriff's, on the clerk of court's website and put a name in, and it'll tell you, you know, the history of this individual being arrested or whatever. And you probably could begin to track and do this exactly what she just indicated. So I'm not sure what the impact would be if this legislation would be in place. Would it also continue to be a possible discouragement? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Thomas, you mentioned that you've been talking to prosecutors. I wonder if the prosecutors you've talked with or the Prosecuting Attorneys Association, have they raised any concerns? Are they saying, hey, this could be a punishment beyond sentencing or something? Or what are you hearing from them?
Well, the prosecutors are very supportive of the bill, but they would like to have add more teeth to the bill, and one of the most important aspects that they would like to see is that a direct penalty against the individual. In other words, not going back to the judge for additional violation of a court order, but a specific penalty such as 30 days in jail or whatever the number may be.
I see. So if they fail to report and say, hey, I need to be on this registry, then they say, hey, there should be a more direct penalty for that.
Penalty for that, and then, which is basically asking, requiring a mandatory penalty, whether it's 30 days, 60 days, whatever the number might be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's one of their major concerns.
I see. Lisa, so much of domestic violence is about power and control. I wonder if your organization has any concerns about possible retaliation after an abuser has been kind of publicly exposed in this way, if this registry were to become law.
Yes, that's actually one of the other concerns that has been raised. And I'm so glad Representative Thomas hit it right on the head. It's the unintended consequences. People are trying to do good things and move the ball forward. And we saw that with the strangulation legislation that passed a couple years ago. Ohio was the last state in the union to have a standalone strangulation offense. And we're very happy that happened and that people are getting caught and convicted. But now, because it's a felony, when people go in for medical treatment to the emergency room, nurses and medical professionals have an obligation to report to law enforcement. And we are watching people leave hospitals against medical advice who desperately need care because they don't want their offender to know. They don't want a report to be taken because they know when they go home, the problem will be worse. So that's a part of the concern. And survivors really do know best what's going on in their own homes and in their own situations and what will escalate someone and increase the level of violence they're dealing with.
Yeah. Did you want to add something?
Yeah, and see, I've been in politics since elected to city council in 2005, and I'll never forget, I had this great idea of a bill, and I felt, man, this is a great idea. But once you bring everybody to the table and hear their side of it, well, maybe it's not such a great idea. And I've used that throughout my political career, is to not just get focused on, okay, I got a bill and I got to get it through. No, I have to listen to everybody. And then you realize that, well, maybe this bill wasn't such a great idea after all.
Yeah. And, or maybe it could be changed in some
ways. It could be changed. And that's what this is all about, is starting that conversation.
Yeah. Lisa, what are you hearing from domestic violence survivors about this proposal? Has your organization been talking to survivors or hearing from survivors?
Yes. And actually, our organization has 76 member programs across the state, residential and non-residential service providers. So we've asked them and we've asked them to ask survivors and we've done a little polling. And quite frankly, the data's all over the place because there are folks who are saying this would be so good to know that somebody was dangerous, that there's a risk there, and be able to demonstrate that in some way to people. But we also heard one of the most compelling comments came from a survivor who said, I live in a rural area. I live in a small town. And if I do this and he ends up on a registry, everybody's going to know it's us, and my kids are going to get teased and bullied at school. There's no way to protect these identities. So like I said, we're very happy that people are trying to do something to hold offenders accountable. We're just trying to strike the right balance.
Yeah. So Representative Thomas, you just talked about how you really value this idea of hearing from all these different perspectives when you're trying to craft legislation that has the intended consequences that you want. Where does this legislation stand? Are you still looking for feedback? Are you still talking with people?
Oh, absolutely. Just prior to going into recess, I met with the prosecutor and we talked significantly about it. And one of the things I assured him was that I'm not trying to push this legislation. I want us to make sure that we try to cover all bases and come up with something that everybody can agree upon. And then I said, okay, we'll just put this legislation on hold until we come back from recess, rather than try to work through the processes going forward during recess. So we'll be back at the table talking this through, and I'm assuming we'll be back after the November election.
Yeah.
And we'll try to see what we can come up with.
And I know your co-sponsor is a Republican, I believe, from the Dayton area,
yeah,
right? Is there a lot of bipartisan support for trying to do something to address this crisis?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But we all understand there are just so many tentacles to this that could really cause more harm than good. So we have to try to bring that balance. And this is why, you know, I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Yeah. And Lisa, it sounds like you all want to be at the table and help craft something that makes sense.
Absolutely. And we appreciate the fact that people are looking at this holistically.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most important is that doing nothing is not an option.
Important. Important.
We got 157 deaths, which is a record number. So something's going on that we might be missing.
Yeah.
And this is, hopefully we can try to address that.
Yeah. Well, I have been talking with Ohio State Representative Cecil Thomas, a Cincinnati Democrat, and Ohio Domestic Violence Network Senior Director for Policy and Prevention, Lisa DeGeeter. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this very important conversation.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, the impact of an Ohio Supreme Court ruling on domestic violence survivors. This is Cincinnati Edition.